May it please the court, Sandra Rowland representing Mr. Marcus Pinckney. Appellant asked the court to remand his claim of ineffective assistance of counsel to the district court. That remand is required unless one of two circumstances exist. The first is if his claim cannot be deemed colorable, and the second is that if the government has conclusively demonstrated that he could not show prejudice, even if given the chance.
What would we learn on remand that we don't know already from the record?
Well, Officer McClinton testified in the first trial, but not in the second trial.
What reason do we have to believe that he'd say anything different? He was at the same meeting that Mr. Love was at with the prosecutors, where they went over his testimony, showed him where his testimony was factually wrong. No disputes that it was factually wrong the first time around. Why do you think that McClinton would stick with factual error on his second go-round after having met with the prosecutors the way that Mr. Love did?
There's no demonstration here that there was factual error. He testified under oath that he had participated with the cooperating witness 10 to 15 times in purchasing drugs.
And that was impossible, right? They hadn't made any arrangement. That was totally impossible for him to do.
It is not totally impossible because we don't know the circumstances. We don't know when the search warrant was executed. We don't know what arrangement he might have had with Mr. Love prior. I'm working on a case right now where, after the trial, it turns out that the officer is now under investigation for tampering with evidence, and there was a suggestion in my trial. You know, things are not always what they seem, and we need the opportunity to be able to call Officer McClinton as a witness.
If we determine that that counsel made a strategic choice not to call McClinton at the second trial, that's the end of the inquiry, effectively, right?
But that is not the inquiry before this court. The question before this court is not so much the Strickland question, it is the question of whether he has made a colorable claim of ineffective assistance of counsel and whether the government has demonstrated conclusively that he could not show prejudice. For this court to find that there was a mistake, this court would be required to make factual findings that we contend the court can't make, doesn't have the jurisdiction to make, and doesn't have the information.
If we could look at the record and determine there was no Strickland claim from the record, that because it was a strategic choice, the case is resolved.
Well, it would not be a reasonable strategic choice to not call a witness who you knew had favorable testimony based on the prior.
How many times have you ever seen a defense attorney call the investigating officer as a defense witness?
I've seen it so many times for a limited question. Of course, they're not, calling for 2 hours of direct examination, but to answer
Once
a very
you
limited
get them
question.
Up there, don't you run the very real risk that you've opened the door for the prosecution to be able to lead that witness in ways that they couldn't have done if they'd called them themselves?
I imagine that the direct examination of Officer McClinton would have gone along the lines of, did you work with Ricardo Love before you and Ricardo Love began buying PCP from Mr. Pinckney? And then if the answer is yes, how many times? That doesn't open the door to.
Seems to me to open the door to
much else. Well, it.
What about this counsel? What about this counsel? Your whole case depended on this credibility question between your client and Love, right?
Yes.
And you met counsel made much of the fact that Love testified separately, differently in the first trial.
Yes.
Now, if you call, is it McClinic?
McClinton.
McClinton. You call him to the stand and he said, gee, I was mistaken the first time, and of course so with Love. Your case is through, you're dead. That's the end of the case. Your client is clearly guilty. Now why isn't that on its face?
It's our view that—
Wait a minute, why isn't that on its face? An incredibly dangerous choice on the part of defense counsel.
There's no indication that defense counsel spoke with Mr. McClinton, and it's our view that Officer McClinton would testify consistently with his under oath testimony in the first trial, and there's no reason to believe that he
wouldn't. I thought it was really fairly plain that his first testimony was mistaken. It couldn't have been accurate, could it?
Well, you know, both he and Ricardo Love testified using the exact same words. We made 10 to 15 buys before we made buys from Marcus Pinckney. It could be a coincidence, yes. Coincidences happen every day, but we don't know that, and this court can't decide that. He was a police officer in a big case where a man was facing, at that point, life in prison, and he swore to tell the truth. That was his testimony. There's no reason to think that testimony was untruthful.
The claim of ineffective assistance of counsel is the defense counsel's refusal or declining to call McClinton.
Yes.
My view is if he called McClinton, that would have been an effective assistance of counsel.
Well, but we don't know that. That's because you're assuming that McClinton would have changed his testimony.
So, no, I'm looking at the situation as defense counsel saw it.
So what good is it going to do? So let's imagine you call McClinton, and contrary to what most people think, he stands by his first testimony. What good does that do you?
We have now impeached.
On your entrapment defense, right? It has to go to entrapment defense. And so how is that going to help you?
Because we've now impeached Ricardo Love in two ways. We have impeached his testimony that the first buy that he made with cooperating with the police was with Marcus Pinckney. And we've impeached his testimony that Marcus Pinckney was his one and only supplier.
But you've got to get at inducement, right? Somehow your defense has to show that Mr. Pinckney didn't already have a proclivity to participate in this activity. And there's lots of other testimony that he did, quite apart from Love and McClinton.
It still came down to...
It's a big hill you have to climb. And my point is, how high up that hill are you going to get with McClinton?
Ricardo Love's testimony was still, his credibility was still paramount. Yes, of course, Mr. Pinckney had to testify as to the entrapment, but Ricardo Love was the only person really who could rebut that. The police officers couldn't do that. There were unrecorded conversations. They didn't even know about Marcus Pinckney until Ricardo Love came to them and said, "Oh, I've got someone who we can buy from." So his credibility mattered very much. It was everything. And the more we could impeach his testimony, the more likely it was that Mr. Pinckney would prevail. He also, in his own testimony, Ricardo Love, it would not have been cumulative impeachment because he had changed his answer on that and said, even in the first trial, he said he had sold to 10 to 15 other people, and then later on redirect he said, oh, no, first it was Marcus Pinckney. So the standard here is extremely low. The standard is, have we made a colorable claim, and has the government conclusively demonstrated that Mr. Pinckney could not show prejudice if given the chance. If I could speak just very briefly to the sentencing issue.
You've got a minute.
Okay. We likewise are seeking a remand for clarification from the district judge. Just before imposing sentence, the judge noted that the government had asked for a 20-year sentence based on acquitted conduct. Although, in fact, the government had changed its position and was asking for a guideline sentence at the top of the guidelines of 97 months. It is our view that the judge's words, the timing of his words, the fact that the judge did not seem to register the fact that the government was no longer asking for 20 years, and the fact that the judge did not offer much other justification for a above-guideline sentence suggests that
He said danger to the community. That's sufficient, right?
He did.
Does he need to say anything more than that?
No. And I'm not suggesting that he offered no justification. I think that it's ambiguous here. I can't say that he absolutely was weighing in the acquitted conduct, but I think
said he wasn't. He was pretty clear to say he was not.
Well, he said he was not, and then later...
And he said he was mad because it was a pack of lies and said this man's dangerous to the community.
Well, the pack of lies was a pretty inconsequential. A lie perhaps is consequential, but the subject matter of it was not very consequential. I think that given the timing of when he... brought this up, this was no longer relevant in any way. The government wasn't even asking for it. I think that it suggests that he's sort of showing that he's cutting it in the middle. You're asking for 78, they're asking for 240, I'm going to give you 120. And we seek clarification from the judge of whether he did in fact weigh in the acquitted conduct. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Here from the government.
Good morning. Elizabeth Dinello for the United States. Let me just briefly respond to a few remarks by appellant this morning. First, with respect to counsel's argument that the record doesn't show whether, in fact, McClinton's testimony at the first trial was wrong, I'd call the court's attention to the May 29th transcript, pages 122, 123, where Detective Stallings testifies that the search warrant, which resulted in the discovery of drugs in Ricardo Love's car, occurred on August 27th, 2002, and that later that day, Love contacted the police and agreed to cooperate. Later in that same transcript, page 190, Stallings explains that there could not have been purchases from other individuals before August 27th because...
Controlled
purchases, exactly, because Love had not met the officers. And then further, in the January 25th, 2007 transcript, which is when McClinton testifies, McClinton says at page 152 that he was introduced to Love through Stallings. So as a factual matter, those prior controlled purchases could not have happened. Second, responding to counsel's query as to what defense counsel himself knew, again, I call the court's attention to the transcript of the bench conference during Detective Stallings' testimony. When counsel explaining why he's cross-examining Stallings about the trial prep meetings between the government and Love and McClinton, notes McClinton's and Love's prior testimony about the 10 to 15 purchases and says, so what I anticipate is that there was some mistake or some misunderstanding by Love and McClinton as to the dates. And furthermore, counsel notes that the government had tried to rectify that mistake. Counsel's thus expressing his understanding that the prior testimony was wrong and, moreover, that McClinton now knows it. And then finally, following up on Judge Griffith's question about what good would a hearing be, even if McClinton would testify at a hearing that, despite all this, he was still going to stick by his original testimony, there's still two problems that the defense cannot overcome. First, that testimony, if it occurred, and it really is just almost absurd to think that McClinton would hew that original line, but if McClinton did say that, he'd be torn to shreds on cross-examination by the prosecutor pointing out that it couldn't have happened the way he's now claiming it is. Also, that testimony would be contradicted by the evidence from Detective Stallings. And then furthermore, any testimony about prior controlled purchases really wouldn't be...
If you had two officers fighting with each other on the stand, Lord knows what a jury would do with that.
Well, remember, Judge Silberman, that the second officer, McClinton, would have been called as a defense witness.
I know.
And so
the jury wouldn't make much sense out of that.
But the point is that he would not provide any value to the defense, which is what appellant is claiming. And moreover,
if he undermines Love's credibility, isn't he providing significant value to the defense? defense?
Well, Love's credibility, one, has already been undermined by the impeachment of Love directly during cross-examination when the defense brings out his testimony at the first trial when Love claimed that those prior sales occurred, the controlled buys occurred well before the purchase from appellant. So there already is some impeachment in the record. But moreover, if the defense could show, or if the defense could elicit testimony, I'm not saying that the jury would credit it, and again, we're talking about a reasonable probability. When the jury hears that it really wasn't feasible for those prior sales to have occurred, we believe there is no reasonable probability that the jury would have accepted testimony by Love or McClinton about the prior sales. But furthermore, those prior sales would not bear on the issue of entrapment.
That's a stronger argument, it seems to me.
Because the whole entrapment defense is based on this notion that Love is a big-time dealer. He is selling to appellant rather than vice versa. And the fact or the allegation that Love would be engaging in buys and more of a controlled buys do not show whether he could have induced or, moreover, whether appellant himself was predisposed. And then turning briefly...
Isn't Ms. Rowland right, though, in the sense that she has to show very little here to get a remand, right? I mean, and you all used some language that surprised me when I think you said, at least my notes show, that you did not know conclusively how McClinton would have testified. If there's some doubt about how he would testify, why isn't she right that we just send this back for a remand and clarify?
Well, one, we don't believe that there reasonably can be any doubt that McClinton
That's different from your conclusively argument.
Yeah.
We believe that the court, even if there's a glimmer of possibility that McClinton would testify consistently with his first trial, the record nonetheless conclusively shows that counsel was not deficient because based on how counsel saw the situation, counsel made a reasonable tactical choice, and moreover, that there is no reasonable probability that the trial would have come out differently. So regardless how McClinton would testify, that still doesn't create a colorable claim of ineffectiveness. Then turning briefly now to the sentencing, there's no need for clarification. The judge made clear on the record that he was rejecting the government's request that he consider acquitted conduct, suppressed evidence. None of the comments at sentencing indicates that the judge somehow forgot that ruling or was changing his mind without telling anybody. And moreover, the fact that the judge gave a 10-year sentence when the government was asking for a 20-year sentence reinforces the conclusion that the judge was indeed basing his sentence on the evidence that he had actually heard. And unless the court has any further questions, I'll ask that it affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
All right. Appellant's time is exhausted, but we'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
The government argues that the record conclusively shows that this was a tactical decision. This court and the government and I are not in a position to determine what was a strategic tactical decision. That is the job of the district court. What we need here to know with certainty...
You would concede that there is at least a theoretical possibility of a case in which a court could conclude as a matter of law that it was no more than a strategic, or no less than, excuse me, a strategic decision.
If all of the facts were before the court, yes, but all the facts aren't before the court here. We don't know whether the defense attorney spoke with Officer McClinton. We don't know what Officer McClinton's testimony would have been. Certainly the court affirms denials of 2255s that come up, but there's already been a record made. Here there is no record. For this court to affirm the conviction without a remand requires this court to make factual findings that we don't think that this court has the ability or jurisdiction to make. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Call the next case.